Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome into Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, our favorite Minnesota Viking, and Husker standout Jeremiah Searles. We are so happy to have Searles through Wednesday this week. Good to be with you, sir. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Got to go down and get a workout at the university this morning and see the guys, and it was a solid way to start the day.
We'll hear more about the workouts and all that goodness. Colton Stone is back at it. Colton's a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday kind of guy, and we're happy to see him. He's wearing shorts. Got the phone call from the wife a little while ago going, hey, do you want to grill tonight? I'm like, absolutely, I'd like to grill, but we're here till 6, and then it'll be closer to 7 before I get home. Junior's got practice, so how about we rephrase the question? Grilling sounds awesome. Do you want to turn the grill on?
No, absolutely. Wife asked me the same thing. She's like, hey, you want to get home? You want to grill? And I just kind of said the same thing, like, I'm going to get home at 6:30, and we're having my buddy Spencer Edwards and his wife Sydney over at 7. And
awesome.
I was like, she's like, okay, I'll just put it on the grill pan. All right, cool. Washed my hands of that one and walked away. I was like, I'm not going to fight you on that. That's all you, Ben.
And I'll get the what is a grill pan.
I'll get the You just turn it on, it gets really hot, and then you just kind of throw it on there for a little bit. It's pretty simple.
No, I know.
You have to have a beer in hand when grilling, though.
Yes, that's
a rule.
Well, your grill's sweet, and I've been nervous as all get out about our grill and our smoker because, you know, the dog I've been trying to give away for 5 years has ripped the covers of both.
Well, you have the infrared with the wood pellets and the whole bit deal,
I have the smoker.
Yes.
Right, kind of. It's not a Traeger, it's a Pit Boss, but it's the same thing.
Okay.
It's awesome. And then I have an infrared grill.
Okay.
It was a Father's Day gift I got to pay for 4 years.
It's the best way to do
it's
it.
Wonderful.
Father's Day gifts, Mother's Day's gifts, they're all the same.
But yeah, that thing goes up to like 900 degrees.
Oh, wow.
And sears, and it's beautiful. I can't screw up steaks on it. It's wonderful. So we're talking a little food here. You worked out.
I did.
And you got to see the fellas down there.
Yep.
Here's what's on the docket today. We're going to talk some NFL. We're going to talk some college football. We're going to talk some Nebraska basketball. Don't worry, that's still a priority here on Hail Varsity as Nebraska gets ready for their date with, we hope, Michigan on Friday. Mitch Sherman going to be with us, ESPN.com and magazine, 15 minutes away. Todd McShay, Scouts, Inc., NFL analyst and college football analyst, insider with the combine that gets cranked up in Indy and also the NFL draft. So McShay joined us a little earlier. You'll hear that in its entirety at 5. We'll get Searles' take on offensive line play. There's a couple of stories that Searles will maybe divulge to us about taking an official visit to Arizona State. Because, I don't know about you, Colton thought about going to Colorado, Arizona State. He ended up at Nebraska. The journalism programs at Arizona State and Colorado are good. Nebraska's phenomenal. We love you, Rick Alloway. And so Colton made the right choice here.
Oh, absolutely.
But
I did too. I'm going to preface it by saying, yes, did I.
So did you. So we'll hear why Arizona State's in contention, even though they don't win ever. We'll talk some NFL with Marcus Peters, incredible talent that is now off to La La Land with Zach Taylor, and how and why that can happen in the league.
And it's happening more and more.
You're right on. So you have a take on that. We will get the college way of playing football, i.e. the spread, and some of what you're seeing now in the NFL with it. And then we're playing the game Ask Searles, right?
Yes.
And you threw that out there earlier.
I threw it out there earlier today. Got a lot more responses than I thought.
Well, that's good. People like you. And you can find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio.
At Searles71 underscore HSKR.
So if you have some more thoughts, What do you want to hear about? What do you want to talk about? You can hit Searles up on that. We'll get into plenty of that. You're welcome to Tap the Line, Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Let you do that, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. And we'll have some excerpts as well with Jim Rome and Tim Miles earlier today. That's all what the plan is. But you had a chance to go down, get a workout in, see the team a little bit, bump into some folks. I want to, before we get into your time down there, and Vogue's had a great write-up, Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity. His hot reads are a must-read for you to get your day going sports and Nebraska-wise at HailVarsity.com. But Vogue's asked a question, and it was a great question that folks didn't even want to explore. What happens if Scott Frost doesn't come to Nebraska? Well, that question now is, what happens if Nebraska doesn't get into the NCAA tournament? Have you allowed yourself as a Nebraska basketball fan to walk that line? And I'll be flat out honest with you, man. I'm out there. I think that they can feel okay to good with a win against Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
They have to beat Michigan. They have to get Michigan, or they have to win Friday and get a crack at Sparty on Saturday. Okay, I've been a very vocal, they need three, just to eliminate any BS, any, well, you know, they didn't have enough quality wins. You take down Michigan and Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament in New York City for the whole world to see, you're in.
Absolutely.
And should they be in? Are they good enough to be in now? Yes. Will they get hosed? Yeah, because you've got teams like Oklahoma right now that are in a free fall, that even if Oklahoma say they lose tonight, they will still hang in and they'll knock one of these last four in spots out. Nebraska still has to make that jump according to the bracketologists. I think the selection committee is going to be very, very interested in Nebraska because you have how they look versus what they've done. And how does that kind of marry together to come out with your end result as a at-large if you're Nebraska basketball? So I look at the Huskers. I think they're tremendous. I think they're playing great basketball. I think they are in about every game with probably top four, that realm of power conference teams. I think the teams that are in non-power fives, and I'm talking the Gonzagas out there, listen, I haven't seen a lot of Gonzaga, but I know Nebraska. Would they win every game? No. Would they be in most games? Yes. So I think they're that good. But if they go and play Friday and lose, God forbid, I think that eliminates them.
Really?
I think that absolutely eliminates them because they want to get one more quality win.
Even
some feel that they're in right now. I think that's a vocal minority. Right now, as a Nebraska fan, you don't want to hear, no, your team's not in.
So you believe that even like what Nate said yesterday, the caller in that said, if they go and they play close and it's a good loss, quote unquote, against Michigan, they're out.
I think they would be at their tournaments a week ahead of time right now.
Yep.
Okay. So I think they'd be sweating for 7 to 9 days. Hoping, needing other bubble teams to fall out, or more so needing chalk to win, so Nebraska can still stay alive. I think they got to get a validation win. Michigan is that. Michigan State certainly is that. So that's just where it is. And if they don't get in, what are you going to do as a Nebraska basketball fan?
Burn the place down?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the thought and feel of if Frost wasn't going to come.
Oh, that's right? That's a whole different, like, I was talking a little bit off air. They were going to burn Memorial Stadium down and riot on the ashes if Frost did not come to Nebraska. That was
the word around the league that from everyone you ran into.
Oh, yeah, even Paul Allen, my guy up in Minnesota, was like, dude, if he goes to Florida, like, what are you guys going to do? Like, Nebraska will cease to exist. The whole state will just implode.
It's coming out of light speed in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the planet's supposed to be here.
No doubt.
It was destroyed by the Empire. Okay, I gotta ask you. Right. What do you think? You think a Nebraska basketball fan can go, all right, let's recalibrate. Damn it, Coach Miles in Nebraska, you guys were awesome this year. You're so much fun. You're a one seed in the NIT. And listen, dude, growing up here, you had death, taxes, and Nebraska and the NIT, okay? You just had it before Danny and company got rolling. And I've been to a lot of NIT games. Okay. I think like the last NIT home game for Nebraska was Penn State in the late 90s. Markowski played Penn State. Penn State won, but Nebraska was like a bubble team that got knocked out. This is late 90s. This is when Searles was rolling around on a dirt bike. Mm. And listen, man, they are a team that I think Nebraska fans are going to always love and remember. That said, this is a situation you're very inexperienced at as a Nebraska fan. Either the door's been slammed on you and you're a sub-500 basketball team, or you're a fringe 500 basketball team, and on the rare occasions, seven, you've been an NCAA tournament team or you've gotten the nod, or you've been just there, and I'm talking in some of the 80s and in some of the 90s, where, okay, you're good, but you can look in the mirror and go, yeah, we're probably not an NCAA tournament team. That's a hard look in the mirror right now, because I think we all agree Nebraska's good enough to play and win games in the NCAA tournament. I just wonder right now, though, if they can't handle business, and they've handled a lot of business this year.
Mm-hmm.
But if they can't handle business and they get relegated to the NIT, how are you going to deal with it?
I mean, I think that because Husker fans are who Husker fans are, they will rally behind this team, even if they are in the NIT. Will they be disappointed? Absolutely.
And let's pray to God that the NIT is just, look, yeah, somebody from the Big 12 is in the NIT.
Yeah.
Let's not think about Nebraska being in there, but it is something that's out there.
It's out there, absolutely. And I think Husker fans will rally. They will support. But, I mean, they will also have their pitchforks out for the committee for not putting them in, especially if they do handle business and win at least one game in New York. If they win at least one game in New York and still somehow don't get in, Nebraska fans will go postal, rightfully so. But I do think that they'll rally behind this team in the NIT, and because they are who they are, and it's what makes them great. Mm-hmm. It's what makes Husker fans the greatest fans in the world. So regardless of what happens, they'll be there in support of their teams, but just watch out, selection committee, if you make that fatal error.
Well, and Nebraska's got to handle their business.
Yes.
They got to handle their business Friday. I think watch party's going on with our friends down at Longwell's.
Ooh,
on Friday.
Nice.
So that'll be rocking and rolling. We want to see you down there. And Vogues asks the brave question, what happens if? It's rough. It's rough. But handle your business. You're all right. And you know what?
What?
Honestly, I don't think just getting by Michigan's enough.
See, I
think
disagree.
I think you need Michigan and some help.
I think you need to beat Michigan. Now, I say this. If Illinois somehow beats Michigan, and if we beat Illinois, not enough.
No, and Illinois, that can't happen. And unfortunately, Illinois is one of those teams that they can play out of their frickin' mind.
Yep.
One or two games a year.
So we
Colton doesn't even want to think of that, having to play Illinois.
No, I don't want to either. I mean, we're the biggest Michigan fans right now. For Michigan to win, come play us, because, I mean, Mule hit on it perfectly yesterday. Illinois comes in and we beat Illinois. It's like, you're supposed to. But then we really have to go beat Michigan State. But you go in, you beat a good Michigan team, and you go and you compete and put yourself in a position to win against Michigan State, then that puts you way ahead of the curve.
Well, and you know, Nebraska's one of those teams, too, that could just absolutely flip it around and put a Big Ten tournament run together to win the whole thing.
Absolutely, with as well as they're playing.
Yeah, and that's what's weird. I mean, it's been a long time since they've seen someone the caliber of Michigan, and they handled Michigan incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
You ask a Michigan fan out there, and Michigan fan will be like, well, it was the end of one of those damn Delaney 3-game in 5-day periods, which I don't discount that you're getting a tired Michigan team. You're also getting a hot Michigan team. And, yeah. I mean, it's been December, man. It was December 1st or 2nd when you got Sparty. And they've kind of had their ups and downs. And, you know, Bridges will be playing because somebody, Miles refunded the $400 his mother got from whoever. Because it was only 400. We're talking a little college basketball. Have you explored the possibility of what you will do if Nebraska does not get into the tournament? and I know failure's not an option. This team's too good. We'll get into some NFL coming up. We'll spend some time with Mitch Sherman next. He'll talk some college basketball, and we'll get his take on some Nebraska stuff, too. Todd McShay, Scouts Inc., ESPN Insider, and college football analyst and draft analyst will be with us. I want to remind you about our friends at Sauter Heyman. Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman, the exclusive dealer in Nebraska of pure-grown diamonds, and they're beautiful, they're wonderful, they're eco-friendly, and they are 10 to 40% less than earth mine diamonds. So if it's time to get mama or that girlfriend or that special someone hooked up with a necklace, with some earrings, with some more bling, some more ice, either on the wedding band, or it's just time to get her a nice, maybe get her a pinky ring, all right? Sauter Heyman can help you out, and they're Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Can see Rick, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion in Lincoln or out west in Grand Island. Can log on today, sauterheyman.com. And go find what they have for you when it comes to pure-grown diamonds. Nebraska's exclusive dealer is your friends at Sauter Heyman. Ask Searles. We were going to get into that. We just kind of went basketball there. Searles, it is your playground today. How does it look? We got you tomorrow, too.
Yep.
We can get into Ask Searles because you've got, like, what, eight guys?
I got a good amount.
What's your favorite one so far?
It's got to be. I mean, I'm getting plenty of the Vikings quarterback.
Uh-huh.
So, of course.
So we'll talk some quarterback. Mitch Sherman's next, ESPN.com. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You get Kramer, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Good work. Jeremiah Searles, Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, producing engineering, and we welcome in with ESPN.com and magazine. Also, I think was at the team Jack, and he's been to Allen Fieldhouse again. Now back with us, Mitch Sherman, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well, Chris, Jeremiah, back from Lawrence, as you said, and feeling really good this afternoon. I'm thinking about disassembling my snowblower for the winter.
Good, you know, and
too soon.
I hear that it's awesome out because both of our wives have asked us to grill tonight, and there's going to be a time issue with that, but they're welcome to. I need a thick porterhouse bone in. Yes, that's my order. That'd be good. But no, it's fantastic out. You're smiling and thinking baseball, I'm sure, Mitch, you and your Royals. And I got to ask you here, and Jeremiah and I started this conversation. I want your take on it. Nebraska basketball fan, what happens if for some reason Nebraska doesn't fulfill this dream season and fails to make the tournament? What happens after that? What does Nebraska basketball fan do?
Well, it's a very real if. I think Nebraska has to do something in New York to avoid that. I really do, and I know it's an unpopular opinion here, but put yourself in the take yourself out of Nebraska and put yourself in the chair of somebody in Idaho or in Georgia or Florida or wherever it might be, you know, far away from Nebraska. And I think if you can be honest with yourself and look at this thing, you're probably going to say, well, you know, all these brackets mathematically don't have Nebraska in it. And it just comes down to how much the committee takes into account what they've witnessed. And, I mean, that's definitely a part of it. It's not all metrics, or those guys like Bruce Rasmussen, the chair of the committee, wouldn't be sitting at Pinnacle Bank Arena on Sunday. I saw him. He was there outside the locker room after the game. He watched it in person. So definitely the personal view is important, but just how important is it? And I think it's debatable right now. I'm leaning toward Nebraska needing to do some pretty significant work in New York to get in. If you're a Nebraska basketball fan and it doesn't work out, you know, you lose to Michigan or somehow you don't play Michigan and then lose to Michigan, and then you lose to Michigan State. You know, I think you're, when you get over the sour taste of being a number one seed in the NIT and having more home games or a game at PBA, and it's not going to go over real well. there's not really any way to spin that in a positive direction, other than maybe the hourly workers who get to make some money selling popcorn or whatever it might be. I think a lot of it will depend on what happens with this roster. And I know there's not a slam dunk NBA draft pick in this group, but there's always change in college basketball in the off season. Sometimes huge change, and sometimes guys make decisions to go to the NBA when you saw it with Terren Pettaway 4 years ago. He's not playing in the league these days, and you probably have at least one guy facing a similar decision. If Nebraska misses it, and then everyone comes back except for Evan Taylor, all the contributors, then I think you can get over it kind of quick and be really excited for a team next year that's probably going to be ranked in the top 25 to start the season. But that's a long ways off, and it's definitely not what Nebraska basketball fan wants to think about here in the last days of February.
Well, just the flat-out truth is you've had so much turnover with Nebraska's roster. You know the Big Ten is going to be better next year. Wisconsin will be better. Who knows about Minnesota? Illinois looks pretty good, even though their record doesn't say so. Sparty's there. Michigan's good. Ohio State's Ohio State. You finished fourth because you played really well this year and beat some teams that you're better than. There's no guarantee that you're head and shoulders better than some of these teams you finished in front of next year. And, oh, by the way, Evan Taylor's pretty big deal, as is this roster when you have Cope and Palmer and Roby and some of these guys. I mean, it's not been the same roster from year one to year two. And the one time you had your big three back with Pettaway, with Siobhan, and with Walt, it wasn't kumbaya time anymore. So you better make it happen while you can. It's kind of my take.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, they have everything to play for in New York. And I mean, I only went down that road because you asked what happens if they don't make it.
Right.
And I think that has to be very much placed in the back of your mind right now. I mean, you are all in on Nebraska making the tournament this year and making history as a program, whether that comes in Dayton or it comes on the weekend. There's a lot out there still in front of Nebraska, and it controls its own destiny. You know, whether the Huskers are in or out right now, and they seem to be out as far as the numbers at least dictate based on what they've accomplished so far, regardless of that, even if that's the case, you control your own destiny. You can get in with what you have in front of you next week in New York. So the opportunity's there. You've beaten Michigan once. Go do it again, and it's going to mean a lot, I think, to those metrics. And, then take a crack at Michigan State. Who knows? I mean, that can be the clinching deal, I think. I can say with a lot of confidence that if Nebraska beats Michigan and Michigan State, it has nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
As Nebraska heads to New York this weekend, I mean, with how they've been playing, I personally think they could have a shot of running the table. I mean, what do they have to do going up there, going forward, to run the table and go win this thing?
Well, I mean, I don't like the matchup of Nebraska against Michigan State because Michigan State's been beating everybody recently. And, you know, unless something happens with Miles Bridges, and it doesn't seem that's going to be the case with, you know, regarding his eligibility. And, you don't root for that kind of a thing. But I'm sure that if there was another revelation about some misdeeds and he ended up not playing, that it wouldn't break a lot of hearts on 13 other teams going to New York. But I don't think that's going to happen. They have to play the way they've played the last month of the season. They have to get contributions from guys like Jordy Tshimanga, who played really well, I thought, on Sunday against Penn State. James Palmer's got to have his A game there, and he had his A game seemingly the whole time and through the middle part of the season. I don't know that it's been quite at that level the last few games. And you know, Isaiah Roby's got to be healthy and ready to play like the budding star that he is. You know, Copeland's got to play the way that he did on Sunday. So just if you're going to win that tournament and erase all doubt, they've got to have all those pieces. Get leadership from Evan Taylor. They got to have all those pieces in sync and playing well. Because even with the Big Ten being down, it's still not in any way, shape, or form an easy accomplishment to go into Madison Square Garden and win three games.
Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman, where you follow him on Twitter. Mitch, want to switch to football and kind of get your take here. And Jeremiah and I were talking about it yesterday, but a popular question that's out there is that merger of speed and physicality, kind of the old Nebraska power with the Oregon setup and system. And it was, I think Tom Chattel had a question about it in his Q&A over the weekend with Frost. And I want to get your take as it applies to the Big Ten. Can you have this new offense that is fast but physical, kind of the Frost offense, can it be successful? And I'm the best way to kind of compare it was Ohio State, but with the Oregon tempo, can you put something like that together and really kind of be a new breed in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think you answered the question when you talked about Ohio State. I mean, that's what posing that. You know, I don't know that you're ever going to bring in the same kind of talent that Ohio State does. And you don't need to, because there's more at work in Lincoln. And Scott Frost has made that very clear in his two, now almost 3 months on the job, that, you know, he plans to concoct a formula that doesn't rely 100% on talent. You know, he wants heart. He wants, and that's not to say Ohio State doesn't have heart. They've got just about everything going. But, you know, he wants to bring some elements back to the table at Nebraska that have been missing for a while. And you know, he's confident that if they do that and that they control the things that they can control with the kind of effort and the kind of desire that they have within that roster and then the way they manage the roster and what they do in their strength and conditioning program in the offseason, that if they can do all of those things, which are I think really under their control, then they're going to have enough talent. That they have confidence in the ability of those coaches to recruit enough talent, if all of those other factors are in place, that not to just be competitive in the Big Ten, but to be a team that challenges for championships in the league and beyond. So, I think it's realistic. Mm-hmm. I think it will take time, but I think that you're not reinventing the wheel with this offense. You're not even doing it within the Big Ten. This model. At least in some ways, maybe not exactly the way Nebraska wants to do it in the Oregon mold. And I think there's a difference. I think the Scott Frost Nebraska offense at its best will look different than what the Scott Frost Oregon offense looked like or the Scott Frost UCF offense looked like. Yeah, you'll have some crossover, a lot of crossover, and some similar looking things, but it's not entirely the same from one place to another.
Mitch, got about 30 seconds. What's coming up from you on ESPN, bud?
Basketball, a lot of basketball. Be in Kansas City next weekend for the Big 12 tournament, and I'm looking forward to writing. Saw Jeremiah on Saturday night in downtown Lincoln at the Team Jack's Foundation Gala, and really enjoyed sitting down with Jack and Andy and Bree Hoffman and seeing Rex Burkhead and talking to Rex and Kenny Bell and some of those guys. Sorry I missed you, Searles.
No, I'm not on that caliber.
But I got a story coming out for our audience who, you know, goes, of course, beyond Nebraska. And you know, people remember Jack 5 years ago this April running for that 69-yard touchdown at Memorial Stadium. And it's pretty incredible the work that their family has done and that foundation has done. If you sat through that dinner as I did, you heard just some incredible stories about what they have done that go way above and beyond Nebraska football. So I'm excited to be able to tell that story next week.
Can't wait to see it. Mitch, thanks so much for your time, bud.
Yep, good talking to you guys. Thanks a lot.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Todd McShay, ESPN, NFL draft analyst, college football insider. Todd McShay coming up in 25 minutes. His thoughts on five Huskers off to the combine. His thoughts on the quarterback class. His thoughts on Mr. Frost in Lincoln. Can tap the line. Schillingbridge Court can tap house. Let's do that. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Chris Schmidt and Husker standout. Our favorite Minnesota Viking, Jeremiah Searles, our favorite Viking. Colton Stone producing and engineering today. Thanks to Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com and Magazine. Talking a little college basketball with him. Let's talk some football, Searles. And what you can do is you can tweet at Searles. He's here through tomorrow at Searles71_HSKR. And he put it out there.
I did.
It's the Ask Searles Twitter feed. And you've got Josh Mitchell.
What they want.
Right? Josh Mitchell.
Yep.
Carson actually painted a picture for Josh.
Did he?
When Carson was 4 or 5, yeah.
Oh, was it a little stick figure like Josh looks
no,
like?
No, it's something he did in art class, and Carson hates art, and art hates Carson. So
I'm with him on that. Big hands and fingers don't do well on art.
Yeah, anywho, that's funny. So Josh Mitchell has chimed in. Brandon Vogel is going to have you chat on the O-line play of Central Florida, specifically Auburn, Central
yep.
Florida. We'll get to that at 25. Paul Allen has weighed in. But the avalanche of, hey, Searles, what's going to happen at quarterback for the Vikes? So I give you the floor. Ask Searles. Tweet at him. And for Viking fans, because there's a billion of you, at Searles71_HSKR. Explain to me the quarterback setup. You guys have had really talented quarterbacks. You've been to the playoffs. You've won a lot. And you've done it with different guys behind center.
I call it the quarterback conundrum. That's where we're at in Minnesota right
good
now.
Words.
We've got three guys all proven and all can walk out the door. And then we have one guy from UNC, Kyle Slaughter, who's a rookie and no one really knows what he's doing. So here is my theory. Again, this is my theory. They do not call and consult me. I do not have Rick Spielman that calls me and says, who do you want at quarterback? No. Here's my thought. They came out and said they're not going to franchise tag Case Keenum. I think that is because the Washington Redskins have shown that that is not the best thing to do if you want to keep a quarterback around. Because all it does is it puts question in the fans' minds, it puts question in the team's mind, and it puts question in your own quarterback, and do I trust you, do they trust me? So I think that they decided not to go with the franchise tag on Keenum, and I think that's because they're going to try and let him hit free agency, see what kind of numbers are being thrown out there for him, and try and get him back. I do think that they want Case Keenum to line up behind center for 2018 Minnesota Vikings. Now, after that, my other thought is that they bring Teddy Bridgewater back on a backup deal, because I'm not sure anyone in the NFL is fully 100% all in on Teddy can be our starting quarterback for 16 games with what he went through in 2016 with his knee. Mm-hmm. I think Sam Bradford walks, which I love Sam. Great guy. He's going to go make a ton of money playing for someone else because he can still play. He's still ready to go.
The backup money market for quarterbacks is still pretty good,
too. It's still
too.
Very good. And if they give him a kind of deal where they structure where, okay, you have an opportunity here. You're going to make a good amount of money, Teddy. And if Case goes down, you're in. And then if maybe it's a one-year deal, and if you go in, you play well, then you can walk. So I think they'll do that because I think that Minnesota loves Teddy. I love Teddy. And I think the organization also loves Teddy. He's done a lot for us. He's really played well when we needed to. As his first 3 years, he took us to a playoff game. And so I think they want to keep him around. And then I think Case, they want to hand him the reins for the right dollar amount. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what Case's agent is saying. I don't know. I mean, there's a big market for quarterbacks this year. So it'll be interesting as far as what he's looking for versus what the Vikings are also looking for.
When push comes to shove, this is generational changing money. In some instances.
Oh, absolutely.
When push comes to shove, guys want to win. And also, they find a place that they fit. They absolutely want to do about everything they can to stay there. How big is the pushback between financial security versus here's a great situation, and for lack of a better term, there's always been the Patriot discount out there. Guys will go take less to win because the fit's good. In New England, that has got to be a major arm wrestling match, not only for guys like yourself, but also for the quarterback spot, because you want to play, you've done well, but the NFL is so cutthroat and so different than any other sports professional league, because it's not guaranteed. You're going to get the crap kicked out of you, and it's going to hang and linger with you physically and mentally down the road, no matter what precautions you take safety-wise. You're putting, you know, you're getting hazard pay, and it's not guaranteed.
No. And the other thing is, with the NFL, and I hate saying it, it's obviously the not-for-long league.
Mm-hmm. No,
and the loyalty aspect is not there.
It's business.
It's not there on either end. Players, there's certain players that are loyal to teams, but they've been there for 8, 9, 10 years. But I cannot think of one organization that says, like, man, we are loyal to this player. It is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately league, and if you haven't done something for me lately, you're gone. And so that's where this wrestling match, like you said, for example, Case is played himself into a position to where he's going to have options. Now, what options cause? At the end of the day, it's going to be a business decision. It's going to come down to money, and it's going to come down to opportunity. Are the Vikings a great opportunity? I guarantee you there's quarterbacks that are hitting free agency that are like, I would love to go play up in Minnesota in a dome with a defense that has almost everyone coming back. That was a number one defense in the league last year. This team's ready to go win it all. So it's a destination spot versus a team like the Cleveland Browns that are going to have to way overpay to get a number one quarterback or to get a big-time quarterback, because quarterbacks are going to have options this year. They're going to have places that they can go that aren't Cleveland, aren't Buffalo, aren't places that guys don't necessarily see as I can win now, because guys aren't playing as long as they used to. They're not playing for 10, 15 years. I mean, you got to win in this window, in this time frame that you have. So I think that Case is, I hope he's back. He's one of my dear, dear friends. And I just, it's a, such a up and down league. But at the end of the day, it is a business. It's how we provide for our families and how we live.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about Teddy, about Case, and about Sam. Give me one wow thing about each of them.
Sam Bradford can put the ball anywhere he wants it at any time. He has probably the best arm I've ever been around. As far as if you go back and watch the one game he really played healthy in this year, that Saints game, he's getting hit after holding the ball and putting the ball on the money on a dude right on the run 40 yards down the field. Teddy brings that mobility factor. At least that's what he had. He had that, okay, I'm back here in the pocket. Something's not right. It's breaking down. I can take off for 10, 15 yards. Case has the absolute X factor. He can run a little bit.
Enough to be dangerous.
Enough to be dangerous, enough to dabble for 15 yards up the middle. But at the same time, I think that he is an extremely accurate passer that people don't give him enough credit for. I mean, if you look what that guy did in college, he set like every record down in
Houston. Those Houston offenses were nuts.
They were insane. And so what he's been able to do, and he always is going to be that guy that has the chip on his shoulder. Being undrafted, a bunch of different teams said no to him. He's looking for it to be, I'm the man, it's my time.
Okay. Jeremiah Searles, it's Ask Searles. Can get your tweets in at Searles71_HSKR. That a question from a Viking fan. What do you do at quarterback? Searles kind of laid out, look, it ain't my decision, but here's some positive things about the guys. Todd McShay's coming up in 10 minutes. Hail Varsity continues.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Todd McShay, 10 minutes away, Scouts Inc., ESPN, and College Football Insider Jeremiah Searles is air guitaring Jimi Hendrix right now. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, and great to have you along. Okay, so we just kind of laid out the Vikings and their quarterback play. Dude, how I know he got hurt, but how good was Cook? Dalvin, I loved watching him at Florida State.
He is amazing, and we knew he was going to be really good the day he stepped foot in Minnesota. I mean, you watch the rookie minicamp, like highlights from when rookie minicamp went on before we even got there, and you were like, okay, this kid's running behind tryout guys and making them look like all pros. Wow. I mean, the dude is just amazing, and what he makes special is what he can do out of the backfield.
He's pro-style back, catch and run.
Absolutely. He's fantastic in that. I mean, offensively, we got weapons all over the place. We got Diggs and Thielen, arguably one of the best duos in the NFL. You've got Kyle Rudolph, who's a touchdown catching machine in the red zone. And then you got good backups behind him. We're hoping Laquon Treadwell can kind of come into his own, first round pick a couple years back.
Yeah. Still kind of. And you know what he did at Ole Miss.
Absolutely. Trying to find his way still a little bit. And then we just add more pieces through free agency, through. I mean, we added a couple guys on the O-line next year, that last year that made all the difference, drafted Pat Elflein. So, I mean, we have a lot of keys. And the main key and the main question for not only our organization, but as a team, is the quarterback spot.
Mm-hmm. With Cook, though, I mean, and I look at, like, Dante Freeman, both Florida State backs. That's what type of back Dalvin Cook is, except his acceleration's nuts.
Oh, yeah. From step one to 60 is ridiculous. And from going 60 straight ahead to going 60 miles per hour left is just as ridiculous.
He's got some shake to him too, doesn't he?
He's kind of got that Amir-like shiftiness to him, but I'd say he's a much faster top speed than Amir. No disrespect, Amir. But I'd say top speed-wise.
Would he be offended by that?
Oh, I'm sure he would. Any fast guy, you should hear the amount of, oh, I'm faster than you. What was your 40 time? Rooted in all the fat guys sitting in the corner, like, oh, whatever, let them argue. But, I mean, the amount of people that argue over who's the fastest in the locker room is ridiculous. But we'll never race because no one ever wants to get hurt.
How about you throw a G down and you race?
Oh, it's been talked about, but the coaches somehow always catch wind of it, and it always gets kiboshed.
There we go. Texting and driving, no bueno. There are stupider things to be doing, but that list is short. So your behavior is always dangerous when you text and drive for every driver all the time, no matter how safely you think you can do it. Sending or receiving a text takes a driver's eyes off the road an average of 5 seconds. It's like driving blind at 55 miles per hour for more than the length of the football field. Texting increases your crash risk by 23 times. And texting and driving in Nebraska illegal with fines between $100 and $300. So, no text message is more important than your life, the lives of your passengers, family, friends, and others on the roadway. So, please take heed with this message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Real easy way to transition into that after talking betting and racing, and then there's texting and driving.
Don't do it.
Searles, we'll talk Arizona State and recruiting trips, and we'll talk a little bit here about SEC recruiting.
Cha-ching.
What's your hearing? The O-line play, going to be important for Nebraska. Searles and I will chat about that with the O-line, Scott Frost and Coach Austin Wundt. That coming up next hour. Todd McShay, when we kick off hour two, his thoughts on the combine and the draft.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back in Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, ESPN NFL Draft Analyst, college football analyst Todd McShay with us. Todd, busy time of year. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Just gearing up to head to Indianapolis tomorrow. The combine kickoff, and all 32 teams are getting ready to do the same. So it's always a fun week, a crazy week, but it's always good to catch up with everybody there in Indy.
Well, and you just got done rocking a podcast, the first draft podcast. Folks can check out on your Twitter feed as well. When you look at the quarterbacks for this draft class, Darnold, Rosen, Baker, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and I'm missing several more. But as we head into the combine and getting ready for the draft, of these quarterbacks, which one are you kind of most intrigued by that you like but you may have some questions about?
You know, I think Sam Darnold from USC has a chance to be the best of the group. And I would say I trust him the most is probably the best way I can put it, from an intangible standpoint, a mental makeup standpoint, his ability to create. I think he got into some bad habits this past year, but things that are breakable and coachable in terms of protecting the football, two hands and different things like that. But at the end of the day, I just think with his size, he's got the arm, he's got the ability to extend plays if they break down initially. I think that he's got a chance to be a special player. Now, if I was trying to win a game tomorrow, I think the player who's most NFL ready and polished is Josh Rosen. He's a pure natural passer in the pocket and really goes through his reads well and throws with touch and accuracy, and he has all those qualities. Now, he doesn't extend plays as well as some of these other guys, including Josh Allen from Wyoming, Darnold, who I talked about, certainly not Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson, but and he also, you've got to sort through kind of who he is as a person and what he wants to be and how he's going to work and be coachable and those sorts of things. So Rosen is interesting in that regard. Josh Allen has the most upside coming out of Wyoming, big, tall guy with the best arm I think I've seen in at least 5 years in the NFL draft. But he's the least consistent throwing the football and has work to do in that area. And then there's Baker Mayfield, who's the smallest of the group and loves the spotlight and the limelight and all that, but also loves football. And he's a winner, and he's played the most football, and he is very accurate throwing the ball. So those are four guys right there that I think are all in the first round. And I think Lamar Jackson, who I mentioned before from Louisville, has got a chance to work himself into the first round if he interviews very well and is showing improvement in terms of his footwork and consistency with his accuracy, because he's just a special talent with the ball in his hand.
Todd McShay with us a few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio. I'm going to go back to Josh Allen, and there's a Nebraska connection with Coach Bull, obviously. And who does Allen remind you of from past classes or maybe somebody in the league?
Reminds me of a younger Ben Roethlisberger. You know, I don't know that he's going to have great speed. And I'm talking about Ben, you know, before he packed on a few pounds when he was coming out of Miami of Ohio and a little bit more mobile, and Ben still is. I mean, he shows the ability, just the instincts in the pocket, and whether it's breaking tackles or just moving around subtly. Allen has that. He's a better athlete, but they both have that arm where you can fit the ball into to really tight windows. And both of these guys, just the highlight reel, when you put on Roethlisberger's tape, if you're to take his 10 best throws from a given season, and Allen's 10 best throws, they're both just jaw-dropping. And I think that's kind of the comparison. I've heard some to Carson Wentz because they both had the same coaching staff. They both had the same exact, you know, height and weight. But Allen, to me, is a little more physically gifted in terms of the arm strength and mobility combination. I think Wentz was more mature in terms of his football intelligence and what he knew coming out of college at the same point. So Allen's, you know, he's just a work in progress, but man, he is talented. And it won't shock me, you know, when it's all said and done, if he winds up being the first overall pick for the Cleveland Browns.
With Baker Mayfield, I mean, tremendous career. He's persevered, kind of being counted out, and he's just won, and he's done it with a lot of flair. Sometimes that flair is carried over to the offseason or even on field. The sense you get, people you've talked to, is there a big fear factor with Mayfield's personality out there?
I don't think it's as much the stuff that everyone's seen. I think it's more, if teams have concern, they've voiced, it has to do with Mayfield. I alluded to it earlier. Mm-hmm. He loves being a celebrity. He loves the spotlight on him. And everywhere he goes, it's a kind of a circus. I don't want to say Tim Tebow, because nothing will ever compare to that. But it's a little bit of that, where I guess it's his infectious personality. It's the way he's played. It's the high level he's played at, the amount of winning that he's done, how much energy he brings to the field. Fans love it. Teammates love it. Opponents hate it, you know. But more important to Mayfield and his future, teams want to dig deep and find out, do you need the game? You know, Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are all the same, all the elite guys. They are obsessed with the game. It's a compulsion. And they work tireless hours. And so they want to know with Mayfield, yes, we know you love the game, but are you ready to work and put in all the time rather than using some of your free time to go enjoy what being a quarterback in the NFL can bring you? And I think that's what teams are really working hard on, because I'm not overly worried about the height as much as I would have been, you know, 10 or so years ago. I think he can overcome it. He showed it on the field. I think you just got to figure out who he is and how he plans on spending all of his time. And if you feel good about that, then I think Baker Mayfield's a top 10 pick.
Let's talk about Barkley from Penn State. And folks have been able to find running backs via free agency late in the draft. Gurley also was a high pick, and look how well he's done for the Rams. What do you project for Barkley at the NFL level? He was tremendous to watch in the Big Ten.
Yeah, he has the highest grade that I've given to a running back since Adrian Peterson.
Wow.
You know, I think he's you can compare him to Todd Gurley. I think there's some comparison there. Even some have gone back and said and Barry Sanders too, and there are some comparisons there. But with Barkley, you're getting a guy who is very rare in that he's over 230 pounds. He's rocked up. He's a workout warrior, and he has the feet of a 190 pound back, and the acceleration and the speed. And then you got a guy who can run between the tackles because he has that size, and can catch the football very effectively, and also can be a good pass blocker. So he's an every-down starter from day one. And I think just from his tools and what we've seen from him, and his intangibles too, he's just a great young man and loves the game and loves working and is a leader. And so you get kind of a change-your-program type player in Saquon Barkley, and I think because of that, he's not going to last very long. We've seen guys go in the top five in recent years with Fournette last year. Todd Gurley, as you mentioned, Ezekiel Elliott. And I think a team, maybe it's the Browns with pick number four. Could be the Colts at three, the Giants at two. I mean, there are enough teams that have running back needs in the top five. I think Barkley will go. And then after that, you've got a bunch of really good running backs. This is one of the deeper classes in years. But I think they're all at late first, second round when you're talking about Darius Geis from LSU, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb from Georgia, Ronald Jones from USC, even Rashad Penny from San Diego State, Kerryon Johnson from Auburn, Mark Walton from Miami. This group is really talented.
A few more minutes here. Todd McShay, kind enough to join us, Hail Varsity Radio. Roquan Smith, incredible from Georgia. Where does he kind of sit from your linebacker list? Is he top or is there someone in front of him?
Well, it depends on where you put Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, who's 6'5", 250, can rush the quarterback and also can cover and had 102 tackles this year versus, can play the run. So he's a complete player. Roquan Smith fits perfectly as that weak side linebacker in a 4-3 defense where you cover him up, and by that I mean you get guys that can block up front for him and let him run. And if he's running free and not having to deal with blockers, he's all over the field. He had an awesome second half of that Rose Bowl. He played really well in the national championship game. And he's an instinctive player with speed and the ability to make big plays. And I think he's right up there. Edmonds is right up there. Really, it's a strong class. Rashawn Evans, who also in the national championship game from Alabama, inside linebacker. I think you're going to see a handful of these linebackers go pretty early in the draft.
Got a list of Nebraska guys, and it's the most in quite a while that Nebraska has sent to the combine. Nick Gates coming out early. Chris Jones, a senior. Kalu's played a lot of corner but spent safety last year under Diaco. Tanner Lee, of course, at quarterback, and Drew Brown. Of those guys I've listed off, I know they're not first or second round names, but of the Nebraska crop, which player do you think has the best chance in the NFL right now? I know it's combine time, but that's quite a list for Nebraska.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's frustrating if you're a Nebraska fan. It is, but it's not what it should be. Mm. And now you have a Scott Frost come in, and UCF is going to have a more impressive group of guys get drafted this year, starting with Mike Hughes in the first round at cornerback, than Nebraska will, which tells you, what has happened with the talent base and where it needs to go back to. And, not to be negative on it, but you look back in the years when Nebraska was great. It's seven guys drafted in 01, seven guys drafted in 99, first rounders, second rounders, all over the place, Grant Wistrom, Jason Peter, et cetera, et cetera. So while it is good that they have a lot of guys going, I think if you're a Nebraska fan, you'd like to see more players early and higher level. But Kalu, to me, is probably the biggest upside of the group. I think, with his frame and its transition, the safety, the versatility he has, I think he's got a chance to be a good player at the next level. I think when you look at it at the tackle position, Nick Gates has potential. He needs to get stronger, but he moves well. He's 6'5", right around 300 pounds. I want to see you know, if he his explosion numbers with his vertical jump, broad jump, those sorts of things, working on getting stronger and the better anchor and pass protection, because he's a guy with some potential. Tanner Lee's got a big arm. The team's either going to draft him late or bring him in as a priority free agent because there's ability there. There's just been a lot of inconsistency and a lot of ball security issues that he's got to work out as probably a practice squad type player, but he's going to get a shot to chase that dream at the next level, and hopefully he's able to get with a quarterback coach that can work on the few things that he needs to work on in order to advance his game.
The footwork's been an issue for Lee, and his arm's not in question, but the Senior Bowl didn't go great when it comes to the turnovers, and I think you're absolutely right, getting him paired at the next level quarterback coach-wise. You mentioned Central Florida. How high can Hughes go? And what do you project for Shaquem Griffin? Just an awesome story, but an incredible football player. Just such a splash playmaking type defender.
Yeah, Hughes is probably going to be top 20, top 25 pick. He transferred in from North Carolina, had an issue, an incident there at the fight at a fraternity party, and parted ways with the school and wound up at UCF and has been a model citizen since, and just a really good football player. I mean, he's got some length. He can turn and run, cover, and I think he's going to, like I said, top 20, top 25 overall. Griffin, I love this guy. I mean, I just love the story. I've spent some time with him this fall. I just, you know, to have your hand amputated, your left hand amputated, and have everyone tell you that you can't play football, don't bother, don't, you know, you're wasting your time, and then to not listen to anyone and to persevere and come in as a safety and then outside linebacker and then edge rusher and to put up the production he had. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl where people are saying you're not even invited to the combine at this point. And he was one of the best 10 players there and was all over the field. So he's a guy, I think, you get to the fourth, fifth round and looking for a special teams maven and a guy that can play in sub-packages on the defensive side and is just going to give you everything he has. I think he'd be a really good value there.
Todd McShay, Hail Varsity Radio, and you can find him on Twitter at McShay13, NFL draft analyst, college football analyst, Scouts Inc., and his podcast, The First Draft Podcast. Last thought, you spent quite a bit of time around Scott Frost and some very bittersweet moments with Coach Frost at the end of his time at UCF, and you had to ask the tough questions with him. What do you project for him at Nebraska? Give me a timeline that you think Nebraska can kind of flip it around. Scott's been very, very open about the construction process that needs to happen and the job getting done right versus getting done quick. But what do you foresee? I mean, you've covered a lot of college football in your time, and you saw what he did at Central Florida. You were around him. You know he took the job. Now what's next for Nebraska, in your opinion?
Well, I like Scott Frost a lot as a person and gotten to know him over the years. And I think you couldn't have found even if he had no tie to Nebraska, there are only a handful of coaches in the entire country that I think you would, and I'm talking like Nick Saban, sure, Urban Meyer, those type of elite names that maybe you would consider over Frost at this point. I just think with his youth, his energy, his passion for the game, his intelligence, I can't put a timeline on exactly how long and what, but I know this. That roster he got at UCF was really bad, and it was a broken team, and he turned it around in 2 years and went undefeated. And, I think the world of the guy, and I think he made a big sacrifice going back to do this, and I know he's thrilled to do it, but it would have been a lot easier to stay at UCF. They would have won and won big for a lot of years. And so it's going to take 2 or 3 years to get to where he's, you know, feels like it's finally turning around with the recruiting and everything else, that the challenges that he faces. But, I just can't think of many other guys in the world that I would want in that position if I was a Nebraska fan.
Todd, best to you. Thanks for your time today, and we'll get caught up again.
You appreciate it. Have a great day.
Todd McShay with us, Hail Varsity Radio. We'll get Searle's thoughts here on some of the Huskers off to the combine and more. Ask Searle's on Twitter. Culture, a big topic of conversation when we come back.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Jeremiah Searles, our favorite Viking, Colton Stone is in, thanks to Todd McShay. We have plenty of Ask Searles questions coming in on Twitter. Searles, let's hit on the Riley era. You're asked about that.
I did. I got asked what the systematic problems were under the Riley era and what they believe that, and what do I believe that Frost can do to fix that. My main thing with the Riley era is I think that Coach Riley came in and tried to run a college program with an NFL feel. And saying that, what I mean when I say NFL feel is the fact that when you're in the NFL, it is all about how bad do you want it personally, because if you don't do it, someone else will. Well, in college, you need to learn how to do that. And I think that the accountability that you learn in college, the discipline that you learn in college is key there. And I think that that was lacking in some respects with the Riley era. And I think that Frost noticed that right when he got there. And I can already, just being around the university, being around the guys, you can tell that there is a sense of urgency, a sense of accountability, and really just trying to find ways to get the ship righted. And Frost has come out and said it's not going to be easy, but I think he knows the direction he wants to take this team, and he has shown that he knows how to do it. McShay touched on it with the broken roster at UCF, what he was able to turn that around. He comes into a roster that's already insurmountably better than what he inherited at UCF, so I don't think it'll take long to get this thing going the right way.
Let's spend a little bit more time here on kind of mindset, attitude, what's important to you. And, Searles, it's been a setup where I think you were a kid that had, and still do, good feet, really good size, but kind of like internal drive to be the best, and that's mom and dad, right?
Yep.
That's just kind of how you're brought up, and not everyone's been that fortunate. That said, you can go find and recruit some insanely talented athletes, but it comes down to, okay, if they don't have a work ethic, can they join the crowd that has a great work ethic? And that's so easy to say, but man, when you look at a program, I mean, your time, who did you learn from? You came in with an idea of, it's okay, we need to lift 4 days a week at 6 a.m. I need to be doing my thing. I need to be looking at film on my own. I don't need to be told I have to look at film. You're the exception, okay? You're the exception to the rule with that way. It sounds like Adrian Martinez is the exception to the rule that way. Tristan Jebbia is a guy that's always in the film room. I'm just throwing out examples of guys that you have a little bit more of personal accountability. Okay, fine, but not everyone's like you. There's 80, 90% out there that's the air quote norm, right?
Yep.
That, damn it, I don't want to go lift. I don't want to look at film. Let me go check out the rail. Whatever, okay?
Nothing wrong with the rail.
Nothing at all. But I'm saying it comes down to prioritizing.
Absolutely. And to have that internal drive is something that you either have or you learn to have or you just don't care. So for me,
how long do you hang with the guys that really don't care?
Well, I mean,
you want them.
Those are the guys that are usually, I hate saying this, those are the guys that usually are insanely talented to the point where it didn't matter.
It's too easy for them.
It didn't matter what anyone else did because they were just better than everyone else. And when you get to the next level, whether that be college, whether that be NFL, that margin just keeps shrinking. And so the extra stuff that you do is what gives you the edge. The extra film study, the extra lifting, the extra effort is what gives you the edge to a guy like myself, who I didn't blow anyone away at the combine or at my pro. I didn't even go to the combine, that I didn't blow anyone away with my numbers, but I could sit down and I could tell you exactly what defense that the other team is running. I could sit down and tell you exactly what my guy that I'm going up against likes to do on a pass rush move, on a run play, or whatever it is. And guys either have that, and I learned that from Coach Garrison and Coach Cotton. Those are the two guys that I learned that from. And then I tried passing that down to younger guys like Jake Cotton, who then tried passing it down and passing it down. And somewhere, I think that got lost. And I think it might have been in the coaching change. I think it might have been just with a change of offense, because it's hard to pass down what you know when you're starting from square zero. And so I'm hoping that can get back to where the norm is doing the extra. The norm for Nebraska can be, okay, we're all doing the extra, and that's why we're winning 10, 11, 12 games in a season.
I think that that norm of doing the extra was the way things were when Frost was winning and playing here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of that culture. And you hear the culture talk a lot. You wheels down, Searles is back in Nebraska, and immediately it's the Frost fever, and you're hearing a lot about culture. But it's true. I mean, you guys had a certain type of culture. There was an element of culture about Politi in Nebraska that made you say, and we'll get to Arizona State here in 15 minutes, but made you say, I, Nebraska fits me better. And they're going after guys that are talented and they can work with and develop. But, man, it kind of comes down to that mindset.
It does. And just because a guy is more talented than another guy doesn't mean he's the right fit. You can have – you see it in the NFL all the time. Guys that are super talented, they don't bring them in because if you can't fit in with a team or you can't fit in your position group, then it's no good. It doesn't work like that. And with Frost, I think he has an idea of the type of kids he wants, the type of talent coming out of high school that he's looking for, because you don't have to go get every five-star recruit known to man. You can find three-star recruits, two-star, one-star, no-star recruits, and turn them into five-star, because it's not about where you start, it's about where you finish. And Frost has made that very clear in the fact that he's going to bring guys in, develop them, and then put them out on the field, which is the way it should be, and it's the way that college football, that's the way he had it done with him, and that's the way he's been seeing success with. And I think that's just something he's going to continue to do through his tenure here at Nebraska.
What got you developed and ready? I mean, you played really early.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you played early, and B, why do some guys just never hit that level? And a lot's been like touched on, man, about practice style here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, they're not running the four-station practice. This is even with Bo. And then Riley, everyone's watching. And now Frost wants everybody working to get that development. Well, you were one of the guys that Nebraska saw, and you got some reps. You didn't necessarily always get first-team reps, but you worked your way up. Not everyone is in the same kind of situation you were in. So from a development level and investment in the development, was that something that you were fortunate with? Why were you a guy that got more reps than another guy?
A lot of it has to just do with opportunity. Mike Smith was the left tackle going in. He got injured. And, I mean, that's kind of how everyone's opportunity as a young player comes in. Unless you come in and you are just physically, obviously ready to play, which I wasn't my true freshman year. There is an opportunity because guys did get hurt that year that they almost had to burn my shirt and throw me out there. And I'm very thankful that they did it because I needed that year to learn how to eat right, learn how to lift right, and learn how to study the game right. I mean, I think those three things are incredibly important when you come into the college level because you have no idea coming out of high school. I mean, you were just eating everything because you were hungry. And you
what was dinner senior year at Bear Creek?
I mean, whatever mom cooked, whatever mom put in the crock pot at 5 in the morning so that we come home and then I'd eat it all and I'd be looking back up at the plate, like what else is left? And then the bowl of cereal where you'd literally a gallon of milk and a thing of cereal's gone in one sitting. I mean, when you're in high school, you're just eating all the time because you're still growing.
Yeah.
And then when you get to college, you need to eat in order to fuel your body as a machine because you're working so hard. So you got to learn how to do that. And then the game speed is just night and day different from high school to college, college to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to learn how to practice with that. And the only way you learned how to do that is by practicing. And you have to practice at the tempo that you play. You can never replicate a game speed, but you got to get close. And I honestly never saw Riley practice, but just hearing other people is there's a very kind of lax practice schedule. I mean, like you said, with Bo, it was four stations. There's one,
so he did
four.
Have four stations?
Oh, yeah. We had team option running over here, team pass over here, team run over here, and team blitz here. And you would just rotate through.
Okay.
I mean, and it was awful. I can't lie to you. It was miserable. Wednesday and Thursdays were brutal. But it got you ready for the game. It got you ready to go, like I touched on yesterday, play 100 plays, play 105 plays a game. And so I don't know what Frost style of practice is going to be like. I'm sure it's going to be fast and furious. I'm excited to see what it's like. But going back to your question, as far as what made me play early was my mental edge. And that's what I'm still holding on to in the NFL. I know I'm not as talented as a guy like Trent Williams. I know I'm not as talented as a guy like Joe Thomas. but I know that I can think like them. I know that I can think like the best player. No one can control how well I know my opponent besides me. No one can know how well I can know an opponent's blitzes besides me. And that's what I carry over from early on. That is what I knew. Okay, this can be my edge. This can be my X factor, my difference maker, and it worked out really well for me.
With the mental side of things, how did you study football? I mean, when did you, some of us, history was my thing, mm-hmm. right? So I was good at history. Math, not so much. How did you make your mental edge in football more like Schmidt's history versus, let's take Math 101 for a 15th time?
I think for me, it was my mental edge as far as
I knew the game and you learned it, though, right?
I wanted to be better than everyone else.
So, okay.
The competitive part in me.
Okay.
The competitive part of me wanted to be smarter than everyone else. And the way I learned was just watching and watching and watching game tape from the previous years, practice tape, opponent tape, not just opponent defensive tape. I'm talking, I would watch Wisconsin offensive linemen. I would watch Michigan State offensive linemen. I would watch other offensive linemen. I remember I used to love watching Taylor Lewan from Michigan, mm-hmm. a guy I knew was going to be a first-round pick, and meant like, dang, he's a good
player. Here's what he's doing.
Yeah, this is what he's doing. How can I implement what he's doing and make it my own? I'm not going to try and do what he does. Obviously, we're different players, but what is he doing that's making him well, and how can I implement that into my own game? And I still do that to this day. And so I learned from other people on what to do. And as far as the studying, Brendan Stye, who was an awesome offensive mm-hmm. lineman, was a GA here, yeah. and he would sit down, and every Monday I'd walk into his office and say, what's the best game film to watch for this team? And he'd say, I broke down this. This is what you should watch.
Wow.
And so just learning from guys that have done it before. It's the only way. You just pass it down.
Stye's phenomenal.
He's fantastic. Got to see him at the team. Jack Galen caught up with him, and he even started talking to me about, like, man, you really played well. I thought you had good feet. And like just from watching me on the TV. And so it's just an offensive lineman thing that you just kind of go back and forth with guys that have been there, done mm-hmm. that, and you just pick their brains.
That's Searles. Good stuff. More Ask Searles. Can do more of this tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
On Twitter with Searles, at Searles71_HSKR. We'll talk, some recruiting, the type of recruiting that, a little behind the curtain, Arizona State. Colton's like, yeah, my recruiting story and Searles' recruiting story, they're a lot alike. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
I know I told you we were going to talk Arizona State recruitment, Searles era, but got another question here, and Vogues wanted to know this, and I know you had an NFL schedule, so you weren't watching Central Florida offensive line play on Saturdays all the time, but you saw him against Auburn.
Yep.
Greg Austin played mid-2000s, just tremendous. Played with Jay.
Yep.
And Zach Taylor. And Greg's a guy that was with Kelly at Oregon and then in Philly.
Worked me out before my pro day.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
So you're close with Coach Austin as well. Forgive me there. So, all right, man. What's this new Nebraska O-line going to look like with Austin? You kind of know what's back.
Yep.
And you kind of know and have an idea of the style.
From what I watched, so like you said, didn't watch a ton, but I did watch pretty much the Auburn game in its entirety.
They hung in.
But what they were able to do is they were able to keep a defensive line off balance with running sideways, running at them. And what impressed me the most of that offensive line was their conditioning.
Yeah.
I mean, that offensive line was the here we come, and we're not stopping, we're lining back up, and we're coming at you again. And so seeing the conditioning level of that offensive line was really impressive. And also, I thought that they were physical when they needed to be, and they were fast when they needed to be. Meaning, when they needed to get the edge, they were coming to the edge, and they were rolling. And when they were physical, yeah, they weren't the most physical group out of that. I will say Auburn's D-line at times was able to get penetration, but they were able to hold them off just long enough to get there. And that being said, that's UCF's offensive line. That's not the recruiting power that you can bring to a Nebraska offensive line that should be able to at any time go get a big-time name recruit and be like, look, you want to come be part of the pipeline. Like, that is a name that should ring the bell of any offensive lineman that wants to come here.
Does it still?
I hope so, and I worry it doesn't, but I believe that that is something that they are focusing on, and that is something that they really do want to reinstate for Nebraska being a staple is the offensive line, the pipeline, where you come in, you develop, you play, you go to the NFL.
Okay, with this conditioning, take me through the steps of the from what you understand when Greg worked you out. And what they do now. I mean, it's one thing to talk about conditioning and being in better shape and being the strongest guy and having the mental toughness. I'm not mocking any of that. I'm saying it needs to be done. How do you big dudes who hate to run, we all hate to run, guys at 300 pounds or over, get there and then stay there?
Yeah, you got to work at it, and a lot of it is going to be nutrition. A lot of it's going to be
getting. You said that a couple times this hour, and you're not. You're that. It is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, in order to stay a big guy and keep your conditioning, you got to be able to have your body right in the fuel level source. I mean, if you want to run 110 plays a game and be 300 pounds, I mean, it's something I struggle with to this day. I mean, I lose weight throughout the season because it's just, it's not easy to stay at that weight. It's not easy to stay at that level of conditioning with your weight throughout the year. It's hard. It's something you got to work at, and it's something I'm still learning about how to do. So I think that, I mean, I've heard, the reason I mentioned a few times is I've heard it at the university multiple times. From different guys, from the strength staff, from coaches, from Davidson to, yeah, we got to get these guys eating right. We got to get these guys going right. We got to get these guys in the right frame of work in that aspect. So I think that they do need to find ways to do that. But it ultimately just comes down to just work. I mean, you can't, there's no replacement for hard work. And so I think with Zach Duvall getting these guys rolling in the weight room and then getting them on the practice field and showing them how they want to do it in the games, in practice, it'll be the way that they'll be able to keep that going.
Jeremiah Searles, Chris Schmidt, Hail Varsity Radio. Searles back tomorrow. Colton Stone also is in. And with the offensive line play and the Big Ten being what it is, that is a topic of discussion. And what sticks out to you about Coach Austin? What kind of wows you about him?
I saw him this morning. Walked into him, and he is just a fiery guy, like energy-wise. You can just kind of feel it coming off of him.
And that's not always the case, is it, with O-line coaches?
It isn't. It isn't. I mean, my O-line coach in Nebraska or in Minnesota is definitely not an energy guy. I mean, he's a great guy. You can go in and talk. Mm-hmm. But you can just kind of feel the natural energy that he's going to bring. And one thing he told me today is he goes, I go, man, how's it going? I just asked, like, hey, how's it going with the guys? And he was like, man, this group, I can tell, wants to work and wants to get better. And hearing that from him shows how much he already cares about this unit. And so I think that's something that he's going to bring is he's got the energy, he's got the care, and that makes for a great coach.
Well, and let's talk a little O-line.
Okay.
I mean, you've got Farmer.
Yep.
You're going to have either Foster. Conrad or
Decker.
Assuming he gets back from his injury, yep. And that's too bad. You have Foster. And then
who's that young kid, the young tackle, the one that played as a freshman
Farniok,
this year?
Right?
No, the other
Hymus.
One. Hymus. I think he can, if he can put some weight on, I think he could play left. Watching him play, I think he's athletic
enough
to play left.
Doesn't it suck going from right to left?
It's horrible, but you got to do it. But if they can get him there early enough, meaning if they can make the move in this spring, get him a spring under his belt, and then get him a camp – and not be moving him around left, right, left, right, left, right. I think that's good for him, especially as a young player. But then that raises the question, I think Farniak can play tackle. I liked him better at guard. Mm-hmm. I liked his style. He's a physical guy. He's an athletic guy, which means he can play tackle. So I would assume, in my mind, I think Farniak will go to the right, and then you'll have Farmer there, then Conrad Decker, center, and then you'll have Foster, and then the young kid.
Hymus.
And I think that's a good... It's a solid, little low on experience, but I think they could grow together.
We have two kids, too. Bo Wilson was kind of the monster H-back.
Yep.
That is just, I like watching him crush people. the ode to William the Refrigerator Perry type H-back. That was good. Christian Gaylord's been on campus a long time, and he's a dude that came in, I think he's out of Kansas.
Is he a senior yet?
I think I don't think so. I think he might be a junior. Or,
dude, he's one of those dudes that seems like he's been
here forever. But he came in from as a Veer offense guy from high school, and then you make the switch and pro style, pass pro, all of that. Well, you know,
yes,
it's difficult if you're better at run blocking than pass blocking. So I think Gaylord's a guy I'd like to see because he's physical and he's a guy that was pretty highly touted. Jalen Barnett's been on the milk carton because he was a high-profile kid out of Oklahoma that's got great feet, but has he ever trained? You don't know.
No.
And then who else am I missing here on the offensive line? Raritan, kid out of Iowa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you've got a slew of guys on campus that have been on campus that – I mean, it's Nebraska, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota that all went for these same that style, that type of lineman.
Yeah, I think another thing that I haven't seen a lot of is just pure size. I mean, I think that's one thing that this offensive line that I think Frost and them want to bring in is just pure. You can't teach a 6'6", 300-pound guy. It just isn't something that you can coach someone.
Here's the space you occupy.
Absolutely. But if you can get three or four of those guys in there, then that seems to bring more guys with it that seem to look like that.
All right. Final thoughts from Searles. Chris Schmidt, Hail Varsity on a Tuesday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone with us. We'll wind it down. A comment from Jim Rome and Tim Miles today when we come back, as Coach Miles was in the jungle.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Listen, before I let you go, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. Thanks for taking time. You know, I'll be honest, it's a testament to how well you're playing right now that we got to the end of the interview without my mentioning your bench mob. These guys are dropping RKOs. They're holding up judges' scorecards with 10s after big dunks. The list goes on and on and on. How did that first start, Tim?
Well, it's interesting. That is interesting because, so I think it started on the year. We had like three walk-ons down there and then a kid that wasn't playing that was on scholarship who was a freshman. And I had a kid in the rotation, Jack McVeigh, and he's right on the borderline. He'd play, 4 minutes one night, 14 the next. He had been a starter for me previously. And then we have some new guys that we had in and a little more talent, a little more length and athleticism, and all of a sudden he falls out of the rotation. So now he's on the end of the bench, and he's not playing three, four, five games. And out of nowhere, I put him in and just played him like we were down 17 at Penn State, threw him in. I said, Jack, double the post every time you get it. This is what we're going to do. And he played great. And that's the last time he's played. So he goes back to the bench, the guys down there, the walk-ons are like, God, here's Jack. He's used to be a starter. Now he's at the end of the bench with the rest of us. And they were celebrating him that night so much that they're like, Jack, you got to get in this with us. We're going to do this bench mob thing. And I think it was their way to make Jack feel better. And Jack McVeigh is a kid from Australia. I think his girlfriend plays basketball at St. Mary's. And he, like she said it best, only Jack could go from averaging 18 points a game against Indiana over 2 years to now being more popular at the end of the bench and the bench mob.
Right.
And so it's those guys are awesome. I love it when they, do the, like you say, the suplex from the top rope or whatever it might be. The one I liked is when the kid either dies or passes out on a dunk and the kid's calling 911 on his hand and the two stiffs just carry him out like he's a dead body. That's a fun one too. But if fans haven't seen it, just look at the Nebraska bench mob. It'll be worth your time.
They're the best. I love them.
Jim Rome, Tim Miles, full interview on ESPNLincoln.com. Plenty on the bench mob. Searles, what do you got going tonight, man? You got a little less than 24 hours to get it fired up, get a workout in, and then be back here tomorrow before 4.
I got a couple coming over that me and her. I actually text my buddy Spencer, and I was like, hey, man, what time works for you tomorrow night? He goes, for what? I go, well, Sydney and Emma got dinner plans. He goes, it doesn't surprise me. I'm not in the loop. So we have dinner plans that I found out about at the same time he did. And then probably a little Fortnite action to close out the night.
You going to just work junior?
I'm going to try. I'm going to get Junior on there. Hopefully we're going to be a team. We'll work well together.
He doesn't work and play well with others. Well, he's a single child that's been spoiled and kind of pompous.
We're
going
to have to work on that. We'll work on that. Life traits. It'll be his mental edge.
Yeah. Right?
What about you? What are you doing?
I am
the wife cooking, grilling.
Yeah, I want to be back tomorrow healthy. There's just some things we take out of her hands.
Hey,
one is cooking.
Know your strengths.
That's right.
Know your strengths. Know your weaknesses.
Know all of them. Cyril's, you're awesome, brother.
Hey,
appreciate you.
Can't wait to be back.
Missed the show? Can check out the podcast, HaleVarsity.com or iTunes. We'll have select portions up tomorrow on ESPN Lincoln, and that'll be that. Thanks to Colton Stone. And we'll find you tomorrow at 4 o'clock with Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HaleVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Have a great night. Enjoy the weather.